clock. Toss to Turbin. Turbin's in for the touchdown.
Have fun, play with some heart, play with passion.
Turbin is in. He gets the call. On second down and goal and pushes it through, and the Colts have scored a touchdown.
And we are back for another Turbo Talk. Rob, let's do this.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Turbo Talk Live. We've got a very, very special guest who I'll introduce to you in a second. Obviously, yours truly, RT, here with you. Bridget Case, my co-host, is here with you. And the kid, the one and only.
What's going on?
All right, King Griffey Jr. What's up, big dog?
None, hanging out.
I got a question for you. The kid, junior, you know, what do you go by normally?
I try to get my wife to call and my kids to call me Emperor when I'm at the house, but that don't fly. I usually go by junior. I've always gone by junior. Growing up, I was little Kenny until I was taller than my dad. Once that happened, then it was straight junior.
Uh-huh. Hey, Rob, grab your mic.
It always seems like kids outgrow their parents. Did your son end up outgrowing you too, or what?
Yeah, he's like 2 inches taller than me.
Really?
Yeah.
Played wide out, didn't he?
Yeah. Hey, little guy, 6'3" and a half.
We were having great Pac-12 conversation before we went live here.
What you mean great?
Nah.
Honest, transparent.
It was, you know.
No, it was not. No, it wasn't.
It was.
The refs cheated.
Okay.
So this is what? So this is 2000. What year is this?
He graduated in 16, so like 2014.
2014, 15, yeah.
Well, this is before you were at Oregon, or excuse me, the Chargers, right? We got Oregon, we got
Arizona. No, this is when I was with the Chargers.
Okay, so we got Oregon, we got University of Arizona, right?
But I watched the game on TV.
In the Pac-12 championship game. Your son is in that game. He played well, I'm assuming?
Yeah, he played well. Got a little body slam in there somewhere.
Okay.
I'll send it to you because I do have it on tape.
Okay. All right. But they end up coming up short. So, you know, the Oregon alumni up there, top left, she got some bragging rights over you.
Yeah. Well, not. See, I didn't play, so.
Well, you know, it's in the family. You know, one family member takes an L, everybody take an L, right?
No.
That's not how you roll? That ain't how you roll?
No.
I ain't going to lie. No, I'm the same way.
I think he learned that from his dad very young.
No, I'll tell you that. All right, here's the honest to God truth.
All right.
My wife, Melissa, is a Seahawk fan because she grew up in Seattle.
Okay.
Trey is a Baltimore Ravens fan because all the guys, Willis McGahee, Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, all went to Miami. We live in Florida. That's that's where he went.
Okay.
My youngest, he is a Michael Vick fan. So wherever Michael Vick went, that's okay. Where he,
that's how
and he was a Michael Vick fan. He's like a he played quarterback, he had braids. So my son, quarterback, lefty, had braids. Okay. So that was his guy. My daughter is a Carolina Panther fan.
Where does that stem from?
Not because of Cam Newton. Her favorite player is Steve Smith.
Steve Smith, one of my all-time favorites as well.
And I did something that I've done probably once in my career. Usually when somebody asks me for an autograph, I ask for one back. I actually called the Baltimore Ravens and got a Steve Smith jersey for her for right before he retired.
Wow.
Because, she still wore her little Steve Smith jersey when she was like 12.
Oh, my God.
And she's 24 now, so she still fits it, and she's like, "Dad." I'm like, "Oh."
Well, yeah, because when you're a kid, and you wear the jersey. It's like a dress, usually.
No, it isn't.
Oh, mine always were.
No, she. I mean, she is. I mean, she's 5'6", like 135, and I just got her like a football jersey from. Actually, I think I bought it at Super Bowl.
Wow.
When we went and watched Prince.
So where are you in all of this football, you know, fan?
What do you do on Sundays?
House, you know, like.
All right. I grew up, I was born a half an hour from Pittsburgh.
Okay.
But my entire family are Steelers fans.
Okay.
Okay. Makes sense.
I'm not.
Okay.
There was one guy who happened to play in Aliquippa, went to Pitt, and then all of a sudden he went over to the Cowboys.
Oh boy.
You're a Cowboys fan?
Oh boy. My cousin's gonna love you even more now.
Oh gosh.
Well, I tell everybody as I grow up, as you're gonna be a star, you got a roof for the stars.
Oh. Wow.
Wait, so who was this player? Who was the player that
Tony Dorsett.
Dorsett, wow. Oh my
gosh.
So my uncle went to high school with him. My other uncle went to high school with Joe Montana. They bridged two schools together. My uncle was a quarterback. He ended up going to wide receiver. Joe Montana was the quarterback.
Oh, that's so cool.
Wow. No, that's amazing, man. So you got baseball in the family, football, you know, none of the kids ever wanted to kind of follow in that on the baseball diamond path?
No, and like my dad never forced me into baseball. My brother actually played football at Ohio State. Right.
Oh, wow.
He never forced any of the kids to play a sport. The only thing he asked for is when you start it, you can't quit. You got to play the full season. No matter what happens, just play the full season. After that, you know, we can reassess. But, you know, I played 5 years of football. You know, my brother, like I said, went to Ohio State. I was a wide receiver.
Okay.
It was crazy because I did punt return, kick return, punter, kicker. They weren't going to let me be a two-way player because at this time Moeller was a powerhouse high school and they didn't want to have, you know, that one guy go both ways. I was like, I can do this.
Yeah.
But if I'd have gone to another school, I'd have been able to play both ways.
And so what ultimately, you know, made you decide baseball, this is where my heart is. This is the direction I want to go in my career, in my life.
I think it's just one of those things you love. Mm-hmm. You know, I love baseball. You know, I love baseball. I love all sports, basketball, football, baseball. But, you know, my dad played it, and it was one of those things like, okay, let me try this. And, you know, when I got drafted, you can still go back to college because I'm only a professional baseball player. I'm not a professional football player or basketball player. So I could have gone back to school and did that.
Oh, my gosh. And you were so young.
Being young. I know.
You still look young. You're still young.
I graduated when I was 17.
High school. Wow.
Yeah. And
I did too.
2 years later, at 19, I was in the big leagues. But I knew at 14 I could play in the big leagues defensively.
Jeez. Yeah, we were analyzing one of your catches, our team, and we're like, yes. That looks like Rob. He has the same kind of eloquence, you know, and
hold on.
We're comparing, you know, Rob emulates you when he's, you know, out on the field.
Well, I tell you what, I got one of three jerseys because I'm not a huge, well, I mean, unless I played against guys or with guys, I'll get a jersey.
Look at all your jerseys in the back of you right now.
I've never really purchased a lot of jerseys. In my life, I bought I have a Kobe Bryant jersey.
I got one of those.
And I've got a Jerry Rice jersey because I grew up a 49er fan growing up in the Bay Area.
I don't have one of those.
And I got this one.
I want you to know I'm representing
100%. Can you see that?
Yeah, I can see that. That looked nice.
Yeah, yeah. I'm representing the 2-4, you know what I'm saying? The one and only Ken Griffey. One of three.
And then you got like the nice navy blue underneath to go with it.
Yeah, yeah, you know, I had to match it up, swag it out a little bit. I feel like I went with the half sleeves, like I'm actually going out to play a baseball game tonight.
Yeah, you look ready.
You do.
You're like ready to report to fake spring training in the beginning of this month.
Ain't nothing fake about spring training.
What do you want to call? No, what do you want to call it? Season's about to start. Now we find out yesterday. What do you want to call it?
It's not fake spring training. We still got to go out there and do some work.
Summer training? What do you call it?
It's spring. It's getting back into baseball shape.
Okay, so baseball shape aerobics or something. I don't know.
Go out.
I would say no. I'm just gonna. Here's what I would say. I was very honestly surprised that they decided that everyone was going to report to their own facilities and they weren't going to be going to Arizona and Florida and be at spring training facilities. Sorry. Why do I wear gray? This is the worst. Oh my gosh.
I told you she was honest. That's funny.
Yeah. No. it's a way that you got to get everybody ready. And if you go to spring training, I mean, even though everybody's there, you know, you're not going to get the work done that you need. And this is maybe easier to get all the work that the pitchers need. I mean, position players a little bit different because we can go out and run and hit. We can go in the batting cage. But just trying to get the arm strength up for a pitcher and so they don't hurt themselves, that's a pretty big deal.
Does arm
Were you surprised
strength...
when – oh, sorry, ahead, Rob. This is what you happens on Zoom.
You got it.
Were you surprised when the deal got done yesterday?
No, I knew that something was going to happen.
Really?
So you had no doubts about the MLB season eventually going down?
Oh, they were going to play. They were going to make an attempt to play. Because you just don't want to have a situation like 94, 95 where you have a strike and then a lockout. And it take a while for people to come back and things like that. So, you know, with the pandemic, yeah, you can understand that, you know, you want to be safe and make sure that everybody's safe. You know, the players, the coaching staff, the trainers, the people who are at the ballpark, making sure, the grounds crew, the owners when they're there. Mm-hmm. And because they still got to, the planes that there's a whole lot that they had to work through to get this deal. It just wasn't, hey, this is what we want, blah, blah, blah. There's other things that, you know, people don't think of that they had to get through to get this. But, right. You know, it's tough, you know, because you hear about the arguments of, you know, the owners and the players. And
yeah, the economic stuff, you know, that's what the media is going to focus on.
Yeah.
Obviously.
It's the clickbait.
You know, you mentioned the lockout 94-95, and you're saying like you don't want a situation like that to happen. But ultimately, correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, the players, because of that lockout, ended up getting what you wanted ultimately out of that deal. Was that deal based off that lockout was based on the CBA, if I'm correct, right?
Yeah, every 5 or so years, they have a collective bargaining agreement. I think that, if I'm not mistaken, that theirs is in at the end of this year or next year.
I believe it's the end of this year, yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully they got some of that stuff worked out too, so we can keep going smoothly. But when there's 36 million people out of work, you know, if people don't want to hear, you know, what's going on between two parties that are making a lot of money.
I want to know what your thoughts are, though, on how the culture will be, because one, there aren't going to be fans in the stadium. Two, if you're not able to spit or high five, chew sunflower seeds, how does that affect things in the dugout?
It's going to be weird. The thing about baseball is if you play on the backfield, so you're used to no fans and nobody, because
you're used to being alone out there.
Yeah. So we play B games where it's just the coaches and the players. So it's like 8 o'clock in the morning when you start the first game. So we call them B games. So we're used to it. Do we want the fans there? Yes, absolutely. Do we think it's best interest of baseball right now to maybe keep them away and be able to watch it on TV until, you know, the scientists figure out a vaccine to cure this well? To slow it down so we can have the fans back, I think, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe spread the fans out. Looked like NASCAR has some fans out there when I was looking at it.
I think they let 5,000 fans in out of 100,000 seat stadium.
The A's could do that anyway. They barely have fans come to
the game. All right, hold on. See, you didn't have to go there with me, Bridge.
I'm just saying, like, they've already got it figured out.
My hometown team like that, man. Oakland.
San Diego, where are they at now?
The A's, they still in Oakland.
No, the Chargers, where they at?
Oh, in LA.
Okay.
What are you about to say? Bring it on.
just saying, they ain't even there no more.
Well, I know
that's
you've been.
That's true.
I know you've been, highly attentive to what's been going on in baseball. Obviously, this year has been just such a crazy year. Like, man, what you been up to? Like, how are you? How's the family? And you know, how's it been like quarantining, I guess, for you, for Griff?
This is like my normal day. So like, it was like, oh, when we were quarantined, I was like, oh, now y'all about to come into my life.
I'm ready to go.
Like, they were like, what? I go, because all my friends are like, man, I'm locked down. I can't do this. I said, now you see what most celebrities are like. They, you know, go into a mall, going to a store, going here, that you really, you're like, do I want to go? Do I don't want to go?
Yeah.
But, you know, we had, I told my youngest, who's a 2020 grad, I said, you went from spring break to senior skip day to like senior skip a whole semester. I said, right. y'all gonna be the baddest graduating class in the world.
Seriously.
But he started laughing because Andy had a birthday. Wow. So he turned 18. He's my Cinco de Mayo baby. He thinks he's supposed to have like 5 or 6 parties, right. You know.
Did you guys do like a drive-by or anything fun for him?
Oh,
my gosh.
Oh.
No?
Don't need him, right?
Just like give him a kazoo and, you know, happy birthday. Here you go.
Gave him a couple dollars and was like, all right.
Congratulations.
He's 18. He's about to go into college. He's not thinking about all that stuff. The school did a virtual graduation where we just sat in front of the TV and waited for his name.
Was he in a cap and gown?
Yes.
See, I don't know if I would have done that. I don't know if I would have done that virtual graduation.
But remember that video that you sent that was so funny of that guy who was dancing out front and everyone was honking? Oh my gosh, it was hilarious. Yeah. He was out and his family put out a red carpet and a stage.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just dancing and getting everyone to honk, and it was so funny.
Right.
Right. That would have been my child, but no. No.
But they had to wear the cap and gowns just for the ceremony.
No, they didn't have to, but you know, he did. You know, and then, you know, he's been stuck in the house. I said, I don't know about being a 17-year-old, 18-year-old being stuck in the house with their parents for 2 months.
I hear you.
You know, and you know, my wife is like, hey, he can't go nowhere. So you're going to have to do everything. So I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, hey, you got to go to the store, get the mail. You know, I'm like, really? Me?
Well, but hey, nobody recognizes you with a mask on, maybe?
At that time, we didn't have masks.
Oh,
yeah, it wasn't fun.
Well, I mean,
and how my boys are, you know how your boys are, like they get on you. They gave me a little koozie that said essential employee number 24 on it.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
Wow. Let's
that's so great.
I wanna dive into, you know, your time in Seattle, and not necessarily from a baseball standpoint, obviously, like, you know, you're great, you know, one of the greatest ever, but, you know, before we started the show, you know, we're talking about the city of Seattle and the Pacific Northwest. How was it living there for you? You know, what were some of like your favorite spots to go to, restaurants and things like that? Spend your time, if you can remember.
Well, being 19, I couldn't really go anywhere after hours.
true that.
Because everybody recognized me anyway. So my first couple of years, it was, you know, there was a Mexican restaurant in Bellevue, and it's no longer there. There's a couple teriyaki places that I ate. They're no longer there.
That you hated?
No,
Nobody ate it.
I was about to say the teriyaki spots in Seattle to me go hard.
Ooh. Yeah,
hard.
You have El Gauchos,
of course. Yep, legendary.
Yeah, and your normal fast food restaurants.
Uh-huh.
But I was, like I said, I was 19, and you know, wasn't a whole lot, you know, to do. And then as I got older, my taste buds didn't change that much until I was like 27.
Right.
And you realized there were the finer things in life available to you?
Yes, that's when they hit me.
Mm-hmm. And you also realized that your body sort of kind of changes on you, where, you know, it's like, hey, maybe I should start eating certain nutritional value.
What's crazy is I didn't drink until I was 30.
Wow.
Was that just a personal?
I take that back. I got drunk once. I was 24 years old. That was the first time that I drank. I was 24. Wow. And that's because at the time my wife said she was pregnant. Mm-hmm. And all my friends were like, we're going to drink. I was like, okay. And so And then I woke up the next morning going, oh my, I can't do this anymore. Yes. Yes.
Was that like a baseball thing? Was that like,
No, my parents didn't drink. And like right now I can give my dad a half a beer and I'd probably have to carry him. He just doesn't drink.
Was it something weird? Like when you were in the locker room with your dad, was that a vibe in a sense that you wouldn't want to have a drink? Did you feel like you were supervised?
No, my dad was like, he was a teammate. That when he got to the field, he was a teammate. And then when we left the field, oh, he became dad. That's when he paid for dinner and lunch and everything else. Funny. Mr. Provider, that's what I tell him. Yeah. I said, I didn't ask to be born in this world. Now, if my mom was with us, then I would pay. But if my dad was there, mm-mm.
That is so great. No one can experience that. One of my favorite sound bites that I heard from your father was, gosh, I'm gonna beef it here. I'm not gonna get it right. But it was something to the point of, I don't know who else can say when they're at the plate, they hear their son, you know, from behind them in the on deck circle saying,
get a hit,
you can do it, dad, you got this, or something like that. And I teared up because that's so special. I mean, I want to know, what are your thoughts on that when you think back on that?
Well, it was funny because I was on deck circle. And before that, I said, for 17 years, you get to protect me. You got to protect me. Now I get to protect you. So he gets up there and I'm like, come on, dad, get a hit. And then I turn around and my teammates are dying laughing. I go, what's so funny? They go, dude, that's the first time that we've ever heard somebody say, get a hit, dad, and actually mean it. Because usually, you know, it's like, as you get older, it's fossil, gray beard, old man, you know, they'll call you. But for somebody to say, hey, dad, get a hit and actually mean it, they were like, we've never heard that before. And they had to start laughing.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
But like I said, he was a teammate. He was a teammate first. He didn't, you know, look at me any other way. He just said, hey, this is your team. I'm happy to be here. Let's go play.
Wow. Let's talk about, though, when he grounded you. He took your keys away in the dugout.
He didn't ground me.
That ain't a true story.
The rumor, then.
I did tell him this. I said, because he stayed with me. I said, while you're at my house, you got to live by my rules.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, man.
He moved out, like, 2 days later.
He said, no, I'm dad. I ain't taking this.
I'm out.
I ain't taking that.
No, he was... You know, my dad is only 19 years older than me. And my mom's 18. Mm-hmm. So my youngest uncle is 6 years older than me.
Wow.
Wow.
So, you know, I stopped being, you know, little Kenny and junior, and I became like one of them. And I'm like, y'all know that I'm a whole different generation than y'all. They're like, yeah, we know, but you're still close enough to this. And so I grew up a lot faster than most kids because of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're also put in that position.
Right. Yeah.
Is that dynamic still the same between you and Pops? Y'all go out to dinner. Pops is taking care of the business.
Nah, I pay now.
Okay. Yeah.
I send them every now and then. I send them some food. Cause there's a place that I order from and I'm like, I wonder if my dad like this. And he called me. He was like, boy, you done done it. Hey, what you sent this week was on point. I was like, all right. But, you know, we go hunting. You know, we do a lot of things together when he's here and when we see each other. So every November we go hunting for a week. And, you know, usually I take my gun hiking. Don't shoot nothing. I just walk around. And then we get back to the lodge and he starts lying about his stories about, you know, walking 2 miles uphill both ways to school and stuff like that. You know, the stories that they've said.
Right.
Yeah. But I get a chance to hang out with them and it's just, you know, it's basically me and him. I bring my uncle just to settle him down. Cause you know, even though we father and son, I still have to have a different room. He can be in there with my uncle. He can't be in the room with me.
Yeah, I feel you.
Oh, great. I love that. That's so special.
And yeah, it is.
We all think back to that moment when you guys hit back-to-back home runs at my favorite team stadium at the time, California Angels. Mm-hmm. Do you guys each try to convince your kids of who hit the better bomb?
No, it's funny. Like, we don't talk about sports at the house. You know, when you're in sports, it's like you don't talk about it unless the kids ask you. My thing is, it's what they want to do. It's my job as a parent to listen to their interests. It's not them listening to my interests, what I want to talk about. So we'll talk about stuff. I mean, we go jet skiing, we go boating. You know, we do a lot of things together. I tried to get a pontoon boat while we were in the pandemic, because boating in Florida is legal. So I tried to get a boat. My wife was like,
"It's an essential recreational." Yeah.
Yes, along with golf. So I tried to buy a pontoon boat, and
didn't work out.
No, but I
understand what you're saying, man. Because you know, I adopted my nephew when he was 12, and it was after his father was a couple years after his father was killed. My brother, and it's listen. Obviously, you know, he wakes up every day. He sees what I do as far as. You know, I'm still playing, you know, I'm still training and stuff like that every day. We talked about that, you know, those 4 a.m. workouts, a little bit too
early. I ain't going to get till 6.
but it's like, listen, man, you do anything you want to do. You don't have to play football. This is not like, you know, something that you have to do. Like, you have the freedom to speak about and you know, become whatever it is that you want to become in life. I'm just big on, you know, having a goal, you know, wanting to accomplish whatever that is for you in life. So you
I was talking to one of my friends and I said, you know, we talk about goals in life, and I want goals that, number one, people think you crazy. They so way out there that you know, people go, they just look at you like, man, I don't even want to hear that. You know, in the documentary, when I said that I wanted a shoe, I wanted a shoe. You know, when Jordan put on his, I looked at my mom, said, I'm going to get one. And she gave me that look like, okay. And I was like, oh, I'm going to get one. And, you know, basically 13 years later, I got one. And, you know, but those are the things, you know, that were important at that time at age 12 and 13. You know, hey, he got his own shoe. I want my own shoe.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, I was fortunate enough to get one and still have one. But, you know, I set my goals extremely high. And, you know, so because I feel if once you reach a goal, and for you, say, all right, I got, you know, I want to do 10 touchdowns. And you get to 10 touchdowns, there's a letdown. And for me, like during baseball season, I never set a goal as far as what numbers. I'm just never satisfied. And at the end of the year, I will work on what I need to work on. So I never set like a
right.
I want to have, you know, I want to hit 300. I want to have this many RBIs. Because if you hit 300 and you got like a week left, you could have that letdown. Yeah. You have 110 RBIs and you got a month and a half to play, you can have a letdown. So I never looked at it, but you know, and the reason why I don't look at batting averages, because batting averages go like this all year. Mm-hmm. RBIs and hits and everything else, they only go into the basket. Those numbers keep going up. So I look at those, you know, when guys driving in runs and guys getting hits, you know, they can't take those away. So I always say, hey, think about the positives when you're doing something more than negative. You know, for me, hitting wise, I'm not thinking about making an out. I'm thinking about getting a hit. Where most people are like, okay, I'm going to protect the plate. I'm not protecting the plate. I'm trying to do enough damage that he doesn't want to come back out there again.
Yeah. So I'm assuming you're one of those guys who didn't keep track of your stats.
No, I kept track of everybody else's stats.
That's funny.
Oh, wow. And what was the key factor in that?
Well, because I wanted my name to be in the top 10 in every single category.
So that's a goal.
Wow.
Not really. I mean, you just,
yeah.
You know, every day it changes. Like there was a couple lists that you don't want to, like hitting to a double play, you didn't want to be on that list. Strikeouts, you didn't want to be on that list. But, you know, you want to be in the top 10 of average. I want to see who was in front of me and push me to perform. And Harold Reynolds would be laughing because I'd be looking at the thing, I'd be flipping papers over and looking to see, oh, I can catch them, I can get him. And all of a sudden, that. Harold would be like, there he go.
That's awesome.
I love that. Is that, did you have a similar feeling? I know before your documentary came out, and we'll get to that in a second. You know, a lot of people are talking about the Long Gone Summer documentary. Did you feel the same way during the home run chase? You know, you're looking at those numbers and you're like,
what was it, 98?
I'm gonna get up there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I hit 56 that year.
That's amazing.
I hit 56 and drove in 140 plus. You know, things happen.
I mean, the inevitable and what a lot of people are saying is missing from that documentary is the talk about steroids. As a guy in the league at that time, what was going through your head when you knew guys were using?
Nothing. I can't worry about them.
Does that make you work harder?
No. I've always worked hard. My grandmother always said, worry about yourself. Yeah. That was the thing that she was like, you know, because, you know, when people start pointing fingers, hey, he did this, he did that. My grandmother was like, hey, worry about yourself. And you know, my dad, you know, having a dad who played, he wasn't the biggest. He wasn't the strongest. He was the fastest, though. But he always said, hey, there's going to be people bigger, stronger, and faster. Just don't let them outwork you. And nobody needs
to. Did you catch him?
Can I catch him?
I was going to say, did you eventually become faster than your dad? Like, at your dad's fastest and yours.
No.
In your prime.
No.
He was faster.
Mm-mm. Like, it's crazy because my brother ran a low 4.3. And my dad ran a 4.3. And then I'm in there at the 4.4 mark.
Okay. Yeah, that's
what. But I always tell them I'm taller than them, so I always blame it on the height.
What? If anything, that's supposed to give you the advantage.
No, the turnover ratio of a 5'9 player compared to a 6'2 player is a lot different.
That's true, but the stride, that stride though.
Yeah, but you got to get to that stride.
Yeah, that's true. That's real. Well, earlier.
You know what's funny? It's like we talk about this, like we all get together and we all know that my brother was the fastest one. We all know that. And my dad, like, he'll say something, I'll be like.
Right. You know the truth, right?
Tries to get away with it, but. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, when your dad is probably hard, you probably never give up, you know. It's like, listen, when you got
He's good. He's good about it. He'll, okay. You know, he's not that dad that, you know, at age 12, 13, maybe 14, he said, look, you're going to be a lot better than me. And he said it. And,
wow, that early.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Wow. You know, yeah. And, you know, but like I said, he said, you know, we're going to continue to work. You know, there's a couple things, you know, I was a pitcher first, but I only played 2 years of basically outfield before I got drafted.
Wow.
Oh, I only played like my 15 and 16 years, 3 years.
Why'd you move positions?
I was a pitcher, first baseman. You know, when you little, that's where you go. With the best players.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm a first baseman because I'm left-handed, so I can't go nowhere. Even though I did play second. My mom has a video of me playing second base with my hat backwards and shirt untucked. What happened was I was a little upset because I couldn't play first base because I knew more than the coach at that level that nobody in baseball plays second, short, and third base as a lefty. You just – and a catcher. You just don't do it. And he stuck me because his son, you know, we talk about politics and all that. His son wanted to play first, so, he stuck me. And, you know.
Did you want to play outfield? You were cool with that? Like,
no, I didn't. I was like, you know, I finally said, I think I went up to my coach and said, I want to go to the outfield. And I still threw like an infielder my first year. I still threw it sidearm and, you know, I had to learn, retrain my body how to throw. And it was crazy. And then I got drafted, you know, 2 years of playing, basically 2 years of playing outfield ball. But going to spring training, I'd go into outfield. They wouldn't let, you know, kids play in the infield. So they go out there. So I was able to track balls down from the strike in 82 until, you know, I got drafted. So being in outfield, I'm like, guys hitting the ball out here. You know, they say as you get older, you know, as you get the younger you are, the best players on the infield. As you get older, the best players are in the outfield.
Right, right.
Mm. So I would tease everybody, and they'd be like, yeah, okay. I said, well, give me your top 10, and I'll give you my top 10. And they go, oh, never mind.
That's real. Now, when I was young, I mean, I started playing baseball at 8, and, you know, I played up until, like, I think my last year was my freshman year of high school, and then, you know, I was so
devoted. They threw a curveball, and you didn't want to touch it.
No, I wasn't that. It was just that, you know, I was so – it was like, you know what happened was I took a year off, like, my seventh grade year. And for whatever reason, to go from sixth grade to eighth grade was like
– Oh, they moved them out.
Oh,
back
and man, it was different, man. Like, it was harder. Now, I was still a good player, but, you know, I really had to, like practice where, like, that being already good wasn't there anymore for me. But – my passion started to be more with football, basketball. And I know I asked you earlier, like, what was it for you with baseball? For me, you know, the deciding factor for football for me was, because I could decide between basketball and football for a long time. My sophomore year, we're playing in this game. We're playing against the second worst team in the division, American High School. Long story short, we lose that game. And we're one of the better teams. We know it. You know, we lose the game. We're in the locker room after the game, and I'm just going off on everybody. Because I'm pissed off, we just lost to the second worst team in the league. The worst team was Mission High School at the time. Well, they were always the worst team. And I said, look, my best friend at the time, Rashad Miller, was on that team, and he's like, you know, he's telling me to calm down. I said, look, I don't care about basketball. I don't care about anything else. I said, everybody, it was like the last game of the season, second to last game. I said, everybody needs to, you know, get their stuff together this offseason, work hard, work out. Because this kind of game can never happen again. Like, I was just so, I just had so much conviction for the game of football that at that, in that moment, like, nothing else mattered to me, right? And so that's when I was like, that's when I knew it was like, man, like, my future, like, is on the football field, you know. And so I was, and not the hardwood. And so, you know, I was so devoted. But yeah, I always wanted to play center field. You know, we talked before, you know. I looked up to you, obviously, as one of my favorite players of all time. Ricky Henderson, being a Bay Area guy, was my other, one of the other favorite players that I had. He played center field as well, right?
He played everywhere.
So I always wanted to play center field. I always wanted to play center field from day one. I wanted to bat first. I wanted to get on base. I wanted to steal. Like, that was my thing. Whether it was bunting, whatever, like, you know, that was my thing.
The Ricky run.
Say it
walk,
again.
Steal second, steal the Ricky run. You walk, you steal second, you steal third, they ground ball, 1-0.
Yep. Easy.
I used to hate
get on
that.
The board real quick.
Now, Ricky was my favorite player. I still tease him. Like, he made a basket. He shot a ball. We were playing spring training. He was like, I can get you. And we was out there. He shot it, jumped in his car before it touched net, and drove off, and wouldn't let me have a rematch.
Oh,
I was like 13 years old. I was still asking for that rematch in 2016 at the Hall of Fame speech. Oh, I still want the rematch.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
Wow.
Okay.
I do not hang. I'm very okay. I'm really competitive on everything.
I feel it. I feel you.
You gotta be Rob. You've met your match.
Everything, right?
Everything.
Everything, right? I mean, if it's competition, it's competition. At the end of the day.
We were talking about that earlier today. Like, being nervous is a good thing, right? Can you agree with me on that? That means you're competitive?
I'm never nervous.
Ooh.
Okay.
Why is nobody agreeing with me on that? Like, okay. The good Ooh. Nerves, like the jitters, you know, that
no,
feeling.
You're
right?
Excited. Okay. You're excited about the start of the season. That first hit for you, you know what it's like. The same thing, but for me, I fail 70% of the time, you know, when I'm at bat. And you can still be in the Hall of Fame. So I look at things differently. So I'm not going to sit there and go, okay, I got to get nervous. I got to get this hit. I got to get this hit. Because I know that I can fail at any moment. So I don't get nervous. I try to slow down everything and go up there and put a good swing on the ball.
That's a really interesting.
Only time I take that back. I take that back. When my mom starts calling me my full name, that's when I get nervous.
Yep. Well, yeah, I think that's everybody. That's everybody, man. Yeah, but no, that's really an interesting perspective because, you know, I've always had like, ever since, I mean, everybody's different, right? Every individual is going to approach, they have a different approach. I've always had, you know, a little bit of butterflies and stuff like that. Throughout my entire life playing sports, it's always kind of helped me, you know, not because I was afraid of failing, but it just put, you don't want to, right? And so it's almost like a defense mechanism. So you can, you know, at your best avoid it, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, if you're ready, then you ready. But you ain't nervous, you ready to get out there.
Yeah, it's nervous. Like, right. Nervous isn't the right word. It's a sense of excitement. I don't know.
Yeah, because nervous is meaning you ain't prepared for what you're about to do. That's what, right? I think you're like, oh,
that's different.
Ooh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I can,
you
know, see that.
But if you're prepared, you're excited, you're ready to go. It's not nervous. You know, they use the word nerves, but for me, you know, when I know a pitcher is tipping his pitches and I got it, I'm not nervous. I'm excited. Come on, I know what you're gonna throw.
You know what's really interesting to me is, because I remember like playing baseball, like one of the cool things that we paid attention to as kids were not only the swings. Yeah, obviously your coaches taught you how to swing and be on the line and stuff like that, but like your stance. It was like, how were you going to stand in the batter's box? Your stance was always one of the more unique ones, along with your swing as well. But like, where did that stem from, you know, the high elbow, the movement and everything like that? Where did it develop?
Actually, in the big leagues. I mean, I swung like my dad. If you look at my first couple years in the big leagues, I basically stood like him. I was a little taller, so I stood more upright than him. But one day in batting cage, I stood up and I started hitting the ball like 30 rows further to left field. Then I was like, oh, I'm gonna have to work on this. And it just stuck. And I was able to use leverage, you know, hitting more down on the ball, staying through it, using my legs to drive. But before, you look at, you know, we'll say Pete Rose, Rod Carew, how those guys didn't hit very many home runs. They hit home runs when they needed to. But you look at the guys who stand up a little straighter, they hit more home runs, because they use a little more leg drive and as what I would say, you got to have backyard to go yard. You got to have a little butt to go.
I love that. That's so
great. You know what? We were gonna save the streamer questions to the end, but there's one that just popped up really interesting, and I'm actually interested in knowing this as well. Your favorite ballpark. You know, what was one of the favorite ballparks that you played in throughout the course of your career?
Well, always, it's other than your home ballpark.
Yeah,
other than the home one. That's a tough one. I could tell you for me in
football. Yeah, what's yours, Rob?
Are we talking about American League or National League?
Oh, let's do one of each. Let's do one.
Minnesota.
Okay.
Minnesota.
Yeah, because we played, it was a dome, but I did a lot of damage in there. That's right. Wow. You want to go to, say, your favorite ballpark is this, and your numbers don't reflect that. And I don't know how well I did in Dodger Stadium, but Dodger Stadium was pretty nice.
Yeah.
It's Dodgers, cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Just the history. That's there. What's up. Rob, what's yours?
For me, Oakland Coliseum, man. It's not your. Well, it's not even
Have
because
you
of
used
that.
The bathrooms there?
Oh, here we go.
We have a different facility than everybody else.
The plumbing is not up to COVID or just fire standards.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Like, it's not going to have the nicest amenities, but the in the game, it's live.
Yeah.
The atmosphere is incredible.
Well, their fans, I mean, Raider fans are unreal. I will give them that. And
they even show up to baseball games, too.
Really? Dressed and everything? Oh, my gosh. That's too great. That's I would funny. Love to I've, see that.
I spent most of my probably about year four. Kevin Mitchell was there. I remember that. And I spent most of my time looking in the stands like, who are these people? It was probably year four in the big leagues. I was like, oh, my.
You're like, why is really Darth Vader here?
Yeah. Oh, he was green. It was like he painted like Oakland. It was awesome. When fans do things like that, we think it's great.
Yeah.
When they're having fun and not crossing a line, then if they say something funny, I'll turn around and laugh. I got no problems laughing, as you can see.
Well, you make their day. I mean, that's such a special moment for somebody to remember the rest of their life.
Yeah, but if you yell back at them, then there's like 400 people yelling back at you. So it's easier not to say.
He yelled at me!
And then everybody in that group. I will tell you a story. I was in Detroit, and a guy was like, hey, Ken, I just spent my last $10 to come watch you play. Can you buy me a beer? I bought the whole section of beer. If you were over 21, you got a beer. $1,400 later, I was good with it.
That's so cool special. Stuff, that's something man. Rob would do. Rob would do that.
That is. Well, yeah. I don't know. My dad always raised me to be.
Did you just agree with what I said?
Humility. Cherish this moment.
Or what they say, you keep looking in the stands, don't worry about it, you're going to be there soon enough. I hear that one too.
Exactly.
It's true.
So earlier in the conversation, you mentioned the documentary. You know, you said a quote from it. Congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you.
Such a wonderful documentary. And I wanted to get your thoughts on it. Like, you know, what'd you think when you watched it? When you saw it, and obviously you were part of it.
Well, I got a chance to see it a couple weeks early.
Okay, mm-hmm. I'm gonna preface that. I also heard that the documentary was done like a year and a half ago. And the reason you didn't want to air it that early was because you wanted to give Edgar his Hall of Fame breathing room.
I know all the film. I knew it was done a year and a half ago, but I still didn't, because of the editing and things like that, the color corrections and stuff.
Right.
I didn't see it till 2 weeks prior to, but I was part of the film, so I seen all the footage.
Were you most surprised by other people's interviews, though? Like, the commentary?
No.
Nothing?
No.
Oh, man. Like, I thought it was so awesome to hear somebody like LeBron giving... Nobody would have assumed that he would have been, given his success.
When LeBron was drafted, his first Christmas, he spent at my house. They were there. We're in Orlando playing the Magic, and we have the same Nike guy, who's now the VP of Global Basketball, Lynn. And he was like, "Hey, man, what are you doing?" I was like, "Man," he's like, "You got room?" I was like, "Yeah, man, I got room." Went out and grabbed another turkey, and we had Christmas dinner, and then. Couple years later, we actually had Christmas in LA with LeBron when they were playing the Lakers.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. That's
crazy. But
how was that for you to have? Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, how was that for you to have the opportunity to do that? Like, you know, young athlete coming into the league, he has obviously established himself as a superstar right away.
Similar to you.
No. Yeah.
A little different, though.
Okay.
He went from high school straight to big leagues. I mean, straight to NBA. I went.
Right.
I had to pay my dues and things like that, but that's everybody. But the thing is, you know, my dad was a teacher. As guys came in, I remember me coming home my first year in pro ball at 17, had Lenny Harris, who stayed at my house. you know, he was a young guy. He didn't, you know, so it's all about giving back. At a certain age, you know, it's no longer, you know, about playing every day. It's about what you can do to help the next generation ball player reach their full potential. And it's not going to come from a coach. It's going to come from a player who has the knowledge and sees things. And, you know, as a coach, sometimes you go, you know, there might be a little axe to grind sometime here and there because he didn't listen to you 5 years ago. But as a player, you know, you're going to listen. And I knew when, you know, I returned to Seattle, I knew I wasn't going to play every day. And my job was to help the younger guys be better ball players. And that's what I wanted. So I knew, you know, with, you know, LeBron, you know, at that time, you know, 27, 28, you know, all I could do is say, hey, this is my experiences. You know, you're going to have different ones, but these are mine. And he took off from there. And I tell everybody, because when he left the Cavaliers and went to the Heat, my friends were like, oh, now you're a Heat fan. I was like, no, I'm a Heat at fan. H-E-A-T. Heat at. Wherever LeBron is, that's where I'm going.
Oh, my gosh, that is so great.
You know, but, you know, and the same thing. I mean, the same thing that, you know, the relationship that, you know, with MJ. Mm-hmm. You know, I can call him and ask him questions because of the things that he's done for so many athletes. You know, in a modern shot, I can name you, you know.
Wow.
You know, I can name you, you know, guys, you know, Ricky Henderson, mm-hmm. Dave Winfield, Chili Davis. I mean, Alvin Davis, Harold. All these guys are like my big brothers. They all, you know, when I came into town, they'd take me to eat, and they showed me the ropes. Kirby Puckett. I mean, these guys were unbelievable.
It's really amazing to hear because, you know, not every athlete is like that. You know, not every great one. You know, likes to accept that role of, you know, essentially taking somebody under their wing and showing them the ropes. And you know, they're more concerned about the fact that I ain't want them to be better than you.
Nah, man. If they better than you, they just better than you. You just have to understand right. that. And, you know, but like I said, I mean, growing up, you would see, you know, Chuck Harmon, the first Negro League player. Well, not Negro League player, excuse me. The first black ball player for the Reds. Brooks Lawrence, another pitcher. Willie Stargell, you see these guys at my house. So I'd walk in, be looking at them, they'd be telling stories. And they all were like, hey, this is what we do for players is you teach them. You know, you grab one that's like you and you help him grow. And that was the one thing that, you know, my dad was able to do throughout his whole career. He was, you know, when he got to a certain age, you know, he was a teacher and he knew that. And that's why guys stay in, you know, football and basketball and baseball after their playing career, because somebody sees that from the front office, like, you know what, look what he did for this guy.
Right. And being that mentor.
Right.
I think that's so important in so many different ways, whether on the field or off. And you were such an integral part of making Jackie Robinson Day happen. You were the first guy to wear 42 on your back during that time, correct?
I actually called Bud Selig, Commissioner Bud Selig, and asked him, I was like, hey, can I wear 42?
Okay.
And he said, man, and I called him at home. It was like 8 o'clock at night.
Was this like how soon before?
This was like a couple days.
Okay. So, all right. That's cool.
So, and he called me. He said, hey, I want to reach out to Rachel and call you back. So the next day he calls me back. He was like, do you mind if everybody wears it? And I was like, absolutely not. The more the merrier. And to me, it was, Jack was a guy who my dad looked up to and everybody else previous to him looked up to. And the one thing that I always remember is when they talk about he had the courage not to fight. You know, Ranch Ricky said, I want a guy who won't fight. You know, I want that guy because it's anybody who can go out there. Because if he's a hothead, who's the next ball player? Mm-hmm. Who's the next black ball player that's going to play? it may have been 20, 30 years from now. But he went out there and showed the world that no matter what, I can go out there and play this game. Now, there's a lot of things that he went through that I don't know if I could have gone through.
Yeah.
Or, you know, but, you know, without him, I wouldn't be able to play the game that I love to play.
Yeah. With I mean, a the, lot of athletes the... are so vocal right now. What do you think that, you know, the turmoil that our country's in, what do you think athletes can learn from him and kind of use as a way to bring, you know, us to a new age?
I think everybody is, you know, for me, people just have to listen to the stories that guys are telling, because, you know, different walks of life, but we still have the same thing. You know, having two boys, you know, I'm telling them at age 10, 11, 12, how do you act around police, certain thing. Where a couple of my friends who are not Black, they don't have that conversation.
Right.
You know, when I was growing up, you know, we were able to go to the police station and go to the fire department and things like that. Those were field trips. They don't have that anymore. Well, at least I haven't seen it when my kids were going to school, but right. They didn't have the field trip to the police station. So they didn't know the group. And it's tough when you see these things on TV over and over again, you know, and your kids are looking at you and you're like, hey, we'll talk about it. And, you know, we have these talks.
What do you tell them when you see, I mean, this such negativity on TV? I mean, the horrible things that are happening. What do you tell them?
We'll talk about it after a couple of days, because you don't want to make a, you know, for me, I don't want to make a quick judgment on what happened, because you never know. Because, you know, this could be here. This
sound bites.
After a couple of days, yeah, a couple of days, you know, and things come out, then we'll talk about it. And, you know, we have probably, you know, 30, 40 minute conversations about, you know, how to act. Don't overreact right away because you don't know what happened. Mm-hmm. You're just getting snippets of what that station wants you to see until you see the whole thing. And I have family who, you know, who are police officers, and I've got friends who are police officers. I have friends who are SWAT team, DEA and everything else. And so I spend a lot of time when certain things happen, I'll call them because they're the expert. And the last thing with, you know, George, they were, all of them were like, man, there's no excuse for it. There's no excuse for what happened.
100%.
Have you been keeping up with everything in Seattle?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, Rob, I don't know if you've been checking on it. I don't know exactly what the latest is now, because I know it was Chaz and then Chop, and then it's down to, you know, three blocks, and it's just wild.
Yeah, I still
have friends. I heard it's pretty crazy out there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's wild. I think during the day, I think the protests during the day are much calmer than the nights.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right.
Seriously.
Definitely. I just think it's funny that they ask for cigarettes. Like, that's one of their things that they ask for. And I'm like, why is that an essential thing that you're asking for?
It's just
like diapers and cigarettes.
One of the things that came up over the weekend with the going back to the documentary was your dislike, for lack of a better word, as pertains to the New York Yankees. What
oh, he's laughing because he knows.
Did that stem from anything specific? Was it, you know, was it?
Let me cut in here. I quote: "If there was only one team that gave me a contract, I'd retire."
Oh boy!
Yeah, that's about right.
You wouldn't want to team up with Jeter.
Look, I love those guys. They did well. When I see Jeter, I give him a look, tip of the cap. But it goes back, you know, to the two really incidents that I've had with, you know, the Yankees organization being 12, 13, and 14. You know, there was nine kids in a hallway, and the Yankees are getting beat, and Billy get your effing kids out of here. But he only said it to my dad.
Wow.
So after the game, you know, my dad takes us home and he was like, hey, they're not coming here tomorrow. And my mom was like, oh, you're going to take him back. You're not going to let him tell you what to do. And I don't remember going back. And, you know, the other time was I was sitting in a dugout and Craig Nettle's son was taking ground balls at third base and they told me to get out the dugout. And we were there. Wow. And it wasn't during like regular BP. This was early BP. So we were there at like 1 o'clock. So it wasn't like, you know, the game's at 7. It wasn't like there was a bunch of people. So, and he said, you know, he looked at me, he goes, just remember that. And it's like etched in stone. Like, y'all want some of this? I'm gonna give it to you.
Yeah.
And
wow.
You know, when they say like, you know, that saying, don't poke the bear.
Mm-hmm.
I think that right there, I mean, if you look, I think I hit 36 home runs against them and hit over 300 because it ain't a matter of like, I dislike the guys because, you know, from Mo to Tino, and even though Tino was a Mariner first, you know, Jeter, Bernie, Pet, I mean, you know, Posada. I mean, I love those guys. You know, they were competitors day in and day out. But it's just that when it came to playing in that ballpark and the taste that I got as a kid, you remember that. And that's all it was. It wasn't like, you know, I didn't like the guys. I love those guys.
Right.
I just wanted to prove a point that it might have been different if you would have acted right.
Right. No, I feel you. I feel you on that. I wanted to, you know, one of the other things I wanted to talk to you about were like breakthroughs. You know, for example, like for me, you know, yeah, I had a tough couple years of my career, and it was like, you know, I was in kind of limbo, like not knowing what my future was going to hold, right? And you get this area where you're just kind of down and out. And I was there and then some things transpired and I was able to, you know, snap out of that, get back on my feet and, you know, and start moving again. And I got signed to Seattle at the end of last season. And here we are pressing forward, you know, wanting to continue my career heading into year 9. But throughout your career, you know, was there a time where it was just like, you know, like a tough time where, you know, you just had like you had to overcome some circumstances and break through that really kind of propelled you to continue to go forward?
And
the second part to that question before you answer it is what kind of advice would you give another athlete, a young athlete who may have gone through something similar or is going through something like
that? You know, going through the injury bug that I had in Cincinnati, you know, a lot of people took some shots at me. And, you know, to me, if I do it on the field, then why are you complaining? If I did it off the field doing something stupid, then I think you have a right to voice your opinion. You know, but people felt that, you know, it was in my head and things like that. And, you know, what people don't know, and I tell it, I had 3 surgeries in Seattle. I had a hammock bone, the wrist surgery from running in the wall, and the wrist surgery to remove the screws and plate in my left wrist. I had 16 surgeries in the first 5 years of being in Cincinnati, which is ankle, knee, hamstring, shoulder. I've got 6 titanium screws in my shoulder right now. I've got 3 titanium screws in my tailbone. But when I said, would I do it all over again? Absolutely. Because that's me. It's who I am.
You would make the move to Cincinnati all over again?
Yeah. I mean, I don't look back that way. I mean, I got the relationship with my kids. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what, you know, baseball and sports are only this big. You know, they're a snippet of who I am, but I'm going to be a parent. You know, I got a 26, a 24, and an 18. I'm going to be a parent longer than I'm a baseball player. And I think, you know, that's the thing for me is I learned that from my dad. And, you know, the things that, you know, are a little different. The money's different. You know, people always talk about, well, you got enough money, you can do this, and they can live here, blah, blah, blah. But I want my kids to be as normal as possible and live life without being in a microscope. Because I know how that is.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's big time.
I think that's big time. It's thoughtful and that's so loving of you to recognize that, because a lot of parents these days don't care about that. They just put their kids all over social media, you know, right when they're born. There's tons of selfies and all that. It's just, it's wild, no matter if they're famous or not.
Mine get all over me. They're like, you gonna post me this week? You know, it's my birthday.
See, you have the opposite problem, but because you understand.
It's so funny because, like, I think I started late to social media and they were all over me because they had more followers than me. And then people realized, oh shit, that's him. And all of a sudden it started going like that. They were like, are you gonna give me a shout out? I was like, oh, now you want something. But right. Before, you know, before I had four followers and y'all was in the room, now, now y'all want that shout out on that. So there's some things. They were like, on their birthdays, I get, hey, this is, you know, their birthday. And they're like, excuse me, Dad, you didn't shout me out. You know, I'm gonna need you to go back in there and edit it. But it's so funny. I mean, because again, like, we have so much fun not talking about sports.
Right.
You know, so it's good.
I love that. Oh, I have a good streamer question that had popped up. I know we're not quite getting into this, but somebody asked, what is your favorite home run?
First one.
Which one?
Not hitting the one after your dad and not hitting number 500 in front of your dad on Father's Day.
First one. The first home run. And my kids talked about my trot too. They were like, that is so bad. They were like, I'm glad that you hit enough of them to work on it.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. Well, you know, I mean.
Well, it's true.
Early in your career, you had the opportunity to, you know, be in a movie, and you were, I think you had the first
lots of commercials.
Baseball game created, yeah. if I'm not mistaken. How was that experience, man? I mean, like, you know, how did that all transpire?
It was a little wild at first. The MTV Rock and Jock and, having to do commercials, and, you know, I was like, do I really want to start doing these things? And my main focus was, if my baseball isn't where it's supposed to be, I'm not doing anything. And I think that everybody knew that. If I didn't feel that doing something extra just to do it, no, I did it because my career was where it should have been, where I wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I did most of my stuff in the off season. I think I only shot one commercial during the season.
Yeah.
And the only reason why, and that was a Pepsi commercial because Sammy was there.
Mm-hmm. And is that because, listen, it's like, man, it's the season. I want to stay focused. I want to stay locked in.
Yeah.
No distractions.
No distractions.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the thing is there's really nothing going on from October to February. Mm-hmm. There's really no sports going on.
You know what? Let me ask you this, because that's interesting. You said nothing is going on October to February. You know, one of the things that we talk about in other sports, especially football, and I know we talked about, like, taking guys under your wing. I feel like it's more difficult than football because, like, you know, it's like somebody gets drafted, more than likely to kind of take your spot. So it's like, I don't want to show this guy anything. But
right,
the off season for you guys is seemingly so short. It's like you guys don't have time to do anything. Like, do you think that perhaps baseball?
We got 5.5 months.
Five? Really?
It feels like
it's like three and you're in spring training.
No, so if you don't make the playoffs.
Well, yeah.
You're October, November, December, January, and part of February.
Okay. Because October is the playoffs. That's when the playoffs,
yes.
Okay.
But if you make the playoffs and you win it all, it go like that.
Okay.
Okay, which I'm going to interrupt you there. Let's get into that. Rob and I talk about this all the time. What's more important? Like, as an athlete, do you want to win a World Series or Super Bowl or be in the Hall of Fame? We always ask that. Like, what do you prefer?
We talk about that. And that's good.
I mean,
that's
good. When you think back on your career, you know?
Yeah, I never won a World Series, but my dad's got two of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Enough for the family.
Yeah, so we did everything, you know.
Yeah.
World Series, Hall of Fame. So as a family, we're
10 Golden Gloves, seven Silver Sluggers.
Hold on, I thought it didn't go together. Earlier you mentioned it didn't go together.
She just asked the question that said, we don't talk about it, but like I have his World Series trophies right over to my left.
Oh, pan it over. We got to see.
No, actually they're to the right. I'm sorry. Oh. But they're in a case that's like underneath my desk. Yeah. That? No, it's not owed to you to win anything.
Yeah.
The only thing you can go out there and do your best day in and day out. And, you know, there are players who've won multiple championships because they were on a good team.
Yes.
And you know, baseball is the hardest sport to actually build a championship team. And because one guy can't carry a whole team. Mm-hmm. You know, in basketball, I can give somebody the ball 20 times. I mean, 30 times, they shoot 30 times and they come out the garden with 63 points.
Yeah,
you know, but in baseball, it's the only sport where defense has the ball and we can neutralize their best player. All I got to do is stick four fingers up and tell you to go to first base. So it's a very difficult sport, number one, to be successful, because 7 out of 10 times you're going to fail at the plate and you're still a Hall of Famer. But
that's crazy.
I mean, yeah, because you know, there are certain things that we sit there and go, because all my friends are like, man, y'all got it easy. I'm like, oh, and then they come in the batting cage, and they boom. I was like, oh, how fast is that? I go, that was a changeup, that was 72 miles an hour. And they're like, what? I go, yeah, don't worry about it. But you know, I'm really good friends with Ricky Waters and Thurman Thomas, and you know.
Ricky Waters, my guy, man.
I tell him all the time, you know, when I'm not a football guy and, if, you know, my kids wanted to play football, like, there go your guys. You got any questions? You could talk to them because they've done.
Yeah.
And the same thing when, you know, Lil Thermie wants to play baseball, you know, they were on the phone talking to me. You know, they would send me videos of a swing. You know, what are we going to do here? And that's what we talk about, the younger generation helping out the younger generation is, you know, these guys were the best at their career, but it's a different sport and I'm the best at what I did. And I'm going to give them every bit of information that I have to make them successful, because it's all about, you know, I tell everybody, I want to be that old guy in the barbershop. I remember that kid when he was playing. I remember that kid. It ain't about who you helped. We're like, I remember him.
Yeah.
Right. 100%.
Oh, man.
We definitely appreciate you coming on. There's a couple things that we wanted to do. Don't want to take up too much more of your time. But if you're up for it, we got a game for you that we put together that we want to play called Name That Play.
Okay.
We'll do this. Then we'll get into our streamer questions. But
this is for all the streamers to, you know, interact, play.
Yeah, Right. So this is how it's gonna go down. We're gonna play an audio of four. I think it's four, right, Bridge? Four of your, you know, some of your bet, obviously, like, who knows what's the best play ever, but some four of your bet, you know, best play.
And I gotta name where they happened at.
And you gotta name the play and where it was. You don't have to have like the date or anything like
that. Okay.
Extra credit for the year.
Yeah. Where and when it was.
Okay.
All right. Yep. All right. So we'll play. We'll see. Now, we've never done this before.
And
so,
you know, I've had 10,000 at bats. You want me to remember 10,000 at bats?
Yes, yes, sir.
Huh? I love that. Too good. Okay.
Yes, sir. All right. So we've never done this before. So I don't know how this is going to work. Bridget,
we'll go for it. We'll go for it, guys.
Okay.
Against right, the Cardinals right hand. The pitch. And a high drive. Hit back in the deep right field. Junior has just knocked the door.
That's number 500.
That's number five. Oh, man. So he got,
he
got
already.
That one
immediately. Oh, my play gosh. Play I'm the playing video. The video. Play the I'm video. Playing. Okay, I'm getting to
that's
the video.
That's funny. He's like, oh, I know. That's like, I done heard that one a million times.
Okay, this is so, that's.
How was that? How was that?
It
how
was good.
That night? How did it feel?
It was good. I didn't know that one swing can send so many people home happy out of my family so they can go back to living their normal lives because they were on the tour with me. So when I got hit for $4.99, they was on the plane, the hotel rooms.
Everybody.
When I hit that, they were gone. They went back to their normal lives.
Wow. What I wanted to ask was, how was your interaction with fans? I mean, I know that you mentioned earlier that, like, if somebody asked for our graph, you asked for theirs. And I don't know if you did that with fans as well or not.
No. Fans, to me, you have the hot autograph hounds, and I can spot those guys. Mm-hmm. But it's when the little kids and that you get excited for. Because they, you know, they want it because, you know, they want it. It's not the...
They really look up to you.
You know, and every once in a while, you get the dad with the little girl. Yeah, you know,
right. Using the kid.
Well, you know, having a girl. So I'll tell you a quick story and you're going to laugh. Like, I wasn't there, but I think it was 97. The PGA was in Seattle. And Tiger's walking down the fairway. And Trey's calling him. And he's known Trey. I mean, Tiger and Trey known each other. Trey actually called him Tigger. From winning the food, because that's the only thing he knew. He was like, that's Tigger.
Right. Right.
And my daughter goes, hey, Tiger. And he turns and walks over because he recognized the voice. When boys, you don't really recognize that one. Yeah. That girl, you're like, uh-oh. So he walked over, gave him a hug, and it was like, how you? And then he looked and go, oh, never mind, that's Griffey's kids. but no, it's just a certain voice, you know. My boys can yell at me all day. As soon as my girl go, daddy, I'm like, what you want?
Hey, you feel me? I'm with you, man.
I love that.
I'm with you. My daughter, she just turned 9.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago.
Yeah, you going through that. Get ready to go through it.
Oh, man. I'm telling you. And it's like, man, I'm thinking about it. Like, I'm like, man, it's pretty soon. I don't know if I'm going to be able to tell her anything.
No, you can't tell her nothing now. Just listen.
Damn near.
Just listen.
Damn,
that's what I do.
Just listen up. You told me what you said the other day. You said pretty soon she's gonna be telling me what to do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, don't worry, I got two of them.
Oh, man.
Look, I got a 24-year-old. She said, I leave the house. She was like, where you going? I said, I'm your daddy. She was like, where you going? What time are you getting back? I'm like, oh. I'm like, okay.
That's cool, man. You know, I realized and when you were with Cincinnati, wore the number 30. Is there any significance to that?
My dad wore 30 when he was there. And then I wore 3 because of 3 kids.
Yeah.
Okay.
Love that.
And then awesome. And then when I went to Chicago, I wore 17 because that's the year I got, that's how old I was when I got drafted.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. See, you know, for most athletes, the numbers always play some sort of significance. If you have the opportunity to choose.
I am not superstitious at all.
Really?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. I've traded in the car because I get hit.
See, I've like, I throw away a glove. Like if I drop a pass in practice, those gloves go in the trash. I don't even want to give them to nobody. Like, I don't even want you to have these.
Oh yeah. I'm like, well,
I dropped the ball in these. They got to go.
I had one of my teammates during the game stick his hand in my glove, and he thought it was funny. As he brought it out to me, he stuck his hand in my glove, and I couldn't do anything that inning.
Yeah.
But as soon as I got in there, I went and grabbed another glove, which was never even broken in. So I just took the plastic off of it and went out there with a brand new glove. Like, please don't nobody hit the ball to me. I'm sitting there trying to work the glove in and things like that. I just, you know, funny. Same thing. Like, if you grab my bat, like, I pack my own stuff. You know, like, I pack my own travel stuff. My bats, my batting gloves and everything. I had a trunk. So the only thing that was in my locker at home was all my road. I mean, my home gear, my road gear was locked up and I had a bat trunk. No. And I'm still like that in certain things, but it.
Oh yeah. Like, I don't like to split the pole. Like, if you're walking down the street and it's like,
oh yeah, we've talked about that.
You know, like that, it's like bad luck. Like, yeah, I do a little weird stuff too. I told, I forget who we had on the show, but it was like, you know, during the season, I, like, when I was in Seattle, if I was on the sideline with my coach, it's like I had to stand on his left side because I just felt like if I was on the right side, we weren't going to do good on offense. Like, it's like, I just had that weird feeling, like, I had to get over, you know? And it was funny, too, because, like, if he were to, like you know, like, say, you know, Russell or somebody, you know, we throw the ball first down, we're moving the chains, and I'm standing there, and coach might walk by me, like, in the front, you know? So now I'm on his right. So I'm like, okay,
let me just keep,
I need to make sure.
I just keep moving down with him.
Well, I'm like, I need to make sure I walk behind him, so it's like he passes me back in the front.
Yeah.
So I end up back on his left the right way, like weird stuff.
Yeah. I always sit at the end of the bench.
I love that. Should we move to the next? Should we move to the next play?
Yeah, let's move to the next one. Yep, let's do it.
Well hit to center field. Devon White going back. Gone! A two-run home run.
That's my dad. His home run.
Okay.
Anaheim.
So you know what came after,
like,
that?
September 14th, I think.
And what came after that is you going yard.
Well, when he touched home plate, that's what he goes, that's how you do it, son.
Oh, so he threw a little nugget at you, like, hey, you know, what's going on, what you got? Yeah. I like that.
That's funny. Oh my gosh.
I like that, man.
Too good.
I like that. Oh. I still get competitive, man. My nephew, he's 17. So we still, you know, and I'm still playing. So it's like,
you got to hit him in the chest.
Come on. Come on now. I'm undefeated. Well, I'm still undefeated. You still haven't beat me. No. You still haven't beat me in the 40.
There you go.
Like, we're not, you know, and it's always going to be that way.
Until
he can beat me.
like my dad said, I'm going to cover my circle better than anybody in the league. And he stuck his hands around and he turned around. I was like, oh, he said, you got everything else. But no, look, it's a day. Sometimes you just going to have to let it go. It's going to be that
day. I ain't there yet.
Junior. I turned 50, so I let it go at 50.
What?
You do not look 50.
I turned 50. I turned 51 in November.
What are you using? What's your skincare routine?
Black.
Soap and water.
Black. That's what it is.
I did have
black don't crack.
I did have a old white lady say that to me at a restaurant. I was sitting there with Adam Dunn, and she was like, "Oh my, he looked like the coach," and I started laughing. I go, "Well, I'm 36," and she was like, "Ooh, black don't crack. How old are you guys?" They were like 24, 23. They were like, "Oh." But yeah, soap and water and lotion.
Soap and water, man.
That's such a guy thing. Oh my god.
That's my dad too. You know, you got to wash your face with soap. When I was a kid, it was like soap and water. Like, that was a thing. They put lotion on your face.
See, as a woman, that's the thing is they there's no
nine mall. Step skincare routine. You know,
there is no mall built for a man.
That's true.
For real.
It's true.
Look,
For real. Yeah.
I went today because my wife's birthday is tomorrow. And all the men's department stuff is in the back. You know, the window shopping, you go past Louis Vuitton, Gucci, Prada, all their stuff, women's stuff in the front. We're the men's stuff in the back.
Uh-huh. Yeah, always.
Yeah.
Always. So we're all the way upstairs, you know, somewhere like you gotta
ask. You gotta ask where it is.
Not really. I just use Amazon.
Yeah.
There it is.
That's true.
All right, let's go to play number three. I think these next two are gonna be a little tougher. We started off easy.
Really? Okay.
Let's see. Let's see what we got here.
Bombers checks the runner. Throws the first. Not in time.
It sound like a movie.
I don't know if it's a movie.
That's from a Little Big League.
That's what I said.
Give it away.
Getting picked off. What? Sorry.
I said it sound like a movie. He did say it sound like. I was over here.
This.
Hey, I was trying to lie. Hey, I was over here trying to lie.
Oh, you were actually trying to lie. I couldn't tell.
I was. Come on, Britt. See, we still working on our chemistry, Junior. Man, you know
we are. We're working on it. It's. You know,
come on, man.
It's pretty good though. Usually,
I'm over here. Look, I'm still getting competitive in this little guess the freaking play. Shoot,
yeah,
let's play the last one. Let's play the last,
okay.
And Sammy shoots a high fly out of the left center, and it's Ken Griffey Jr. taking the play away from his father.
Well, as soon as it said high fly ball, and Sammy, I know what play it was, because that's the play.
I don't know which play this is.
He grounded me on it.
When he snagged it from Pops.
You know what I told him? I said, look, I'm a little taller, so if I'd have dropped it, you would have caught it.
Oh, this is the one where you stole the catch from Pops.
No, yep. I didn't steal nothing. I did not steal anything. The center fielder has the right to catch everything.
That's true. That is the truth. That's our job.
Right.
You know, we run and catch. We see ball, catch ball. Go get it.
Right.
So, Swingman, we haven't talked about that. Is it, that's your brand, right?
Mm-hmm.
Shoes? Is it just shoes? What else is it?
Going to bring out some stuff later on. We had took a little hiatus to get things right and hopefully next year we'll have it back in the marketplace just to get out there and have some fun with it.
Okay. You know? Well, the fans want to know your favorite Swingman shoe edition.
First one. It's always the first one.
I can tell. Yeah.
First home run, so. First shoe.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Should we take one more last question and then close it out here?
Let's see.
See, I don't like that look that she gave.
Yeah, I'm getting you know words, I mean? From our producer, and he's like, come on, guys, close it out.
Man, we chilling.
Not me.
And
I'm looking at my big screen.
Oh, you got a big screen.
All of us. This is what I'm controlling everything with.
Oh, you know what? This might be in this one is interesting. This one is, and I don't know if there are any worse parts, but we had a streamer ask, What were some of the best parts about being teammates with your father? But if there were any, what were some of the worst parts about that?
There wasn't any. I mean, like I said, when he got there, he said, look, he says, I've won a couple World Series. I've done this. I've got this. He goes, but this is the icing on the cake that I get to watch, get a front row seat to watch my son play. And we actually had a blast. I mean, what's funny is, he actually led the team in hitting that year. He hit .377.
Wow.
But I told him it's all because I protected him. But he didn't believe that. But, you know, I learned a lot about how to play the game, how to set up pitchers, things that I wouldn't have known till later in my career. I was able to do them, you know, at year three after he retired, year three, and kept going and so on. But he didn't. It wasn't a bad thing. It was actually fun because, like I said, he was a teammate first when we got to the ballpark and a dad second. He would call me and said, hey, let's go to lunch. We'd go to lunch. We'd show up at the ballpark. We'd take a cab together. but he was a teammate. He wasn't my dad. And I think that he was what made it so good is he could separate the father side over the player. Because, yeah, I had bad games and, you know, he wouldn't say nothing. I mean, you know, we're too competitive. I mean, there was a time in Cincinnati that we stood toe-to-toe in the dugout. And the reporters wanted to know what happened. And I bumped my knee against the wall. He was like, hey, you're done. So it was the only time where he was like, dad.
Yeah.
He was like, hey, you're done. I was like, no, I'm not. I'm not. And he was like, yes, you are. And I'm like, no, I'm not. And then the next day, like I got there earlier than him. And he was like, they were like, hey, what happened? There was a little incident between you and your dad in the dugout. Blah, blah, blah. And my dad walked by and goes, hey, man, what time is lunch? I mean, what time is dinner? I said, man, we leave right after the game. And they were like, oh, ain't nothing wrong with them. But like I said, he, you know, the only time that he was like slightly dad when I played, he understood that, hey, I'm a grown man. I'm a play. But he never looked at me and pointed his finger and said, you got to do this. You have to do this. But he wasn't that way. He was like, hey, when you're ready to talk about things, we're going to talk about it. But, you know, obviously, you know, you hit over 300 and you did this and that, you know, the second year, we don't have nothing to say to each other, but all right. But it was, like I said, it was fun. I get more excited about watching people I know do well than me. And most people don't understand that. You know, when my kids go out there, and they, you know, they do something, you know, even though I have this stone face, like in the stands, because the first thing that happens is when my son does something or my daughter does something, they all look at me. And if I show a whole lot of emotion, they go, oh, there he is. He that dad. But if I don't say nothing or do nothing, like I don't move. Like, I tell you, the one of the greatest days I had as a dad, as far as, watching my kids play college sports is it was my birthday and Trey was in Arizona and my daughter was in San Diego playing. And we watched the first half of Trey. And then we chartered a plane to go to San Diego to watch my daughter play her basketball game. Well, as we're coming down, my phone is blowing up and I'm like, and I can't, you know, it's just, and I can't call nobody back. They're like, did you see the play? Did you see the play? Did you see the play? Oh my God, Trey this, Trey that. And I finally got a hold of my lawyer and I was like, what happened? He goes, Trey just had a 95-yard touchdown play. So I never saw that. And Arizona loses the game. Taryn had like 20 points in a basketball game. They lose. They're flying home. So we all go to dinner that night. Everybody's at dinner. And they're both like, hey, man, dad, I'm so sorry. You know, we lost the game. And I'm like, dude, this is the greatest day of my life. And they go, what is that? Why? I go, because I got to see both of you guys play on my birthday. I can't help the score. The score doesn't, you know, the score is the score. But I got to see my kids play basketball and football on the same day. And so, you know, that was the one thing, like I said, growing up, my dad never worried about the score. He worried about the how well you played. He would never even ask that. Hey, how'd your team do? What do you need to work on? How do you feel? Those are all the questions that he had. He would never say, hey, you need to do this. You need to do that.
No, that's awesome, man.
That's so special.
That's great. Yeah. Bye. No, it's great to have really special to have that sort of relationship like that, man. But we don't want to take up too much of your time. Listen,
no, it's late over where you are.
No, yeah, it is. It really is.
It's only 10.
Not late for you, huh?
No. I
personally, you know, on behalf of me, Bridget, and our entire team, like you have no idea, you know, how appreciative we are of you, you know, taking, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours out of your night on a Wednesday to come chop it up with us.
Seriously.
Like, it means a lot, you know, especially,
Joe's.
Yeah, you know, especially coming from me who I grew up a baseball fan and obviously was a huge fan of yours. And
yeah, you were my first guy off the bench in backyard baseball.
here we go. And so no, it's really humbling, and you know, I'm just, you know, I'm just thankful. Like, I can't even.
No, man, I appreciate that, but yeah, I'm a normal person, and yeah, you know, anytime y'all want to talk, I'm here.
Yeah, oh, I do.
We're gonna
do,
take you up on that. That's a scary no, comment, I mean, listen, you just made.
For all of our listeners out there, you know, listen, I haven't told this story. Like, I've never had the opportunity to meet Junior in person, but you know, I sent him a text to offer the opportunity to come on our show. And about 3 or 4 hours later, you know, Junior gives me a call and we talk on the phone for over an hour, and we spoke like you know me for 15 years. And that I mean, that's a moment that, like,
it's a testament to who you are.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. And so I'm really grateful, man. So yeah, man. So look forward to talking to you again soon.
Yeah. And I'll get to see you run. I get to see this year.
Oh yeah. I'm gonna be running. I don't know if it's gonna be in Seattle, but I'll be back on the field ready to go.
And then I'm being there. You better point at me when I'm on the sideline.
Yeah, I know you'll be in the box somewhere. So
No, I like the sideline.
Oh,
like,
okay. Sideline. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, my first touchdown will be dedicated to you, man.
Look, so that's the first game.
That's the first game.
So I need to be there. All right.
You need to be there.
Yeah, my 100%. My little guy playing on Saturday, so I there can be go. Anywhere else.
That's perfect. That's perfect. Yeah. I know you got your own plane and everything like that. You learned to fly, right, when you was in your 30s?
Yeah, I learned to fly. A couple things that I had to learn to do.
All right, man. Well, hey, have a good night.
Thank you so much.
Hey, bless, man.
No problem. Thank you.
Fantastic. And thanks for everybody for listening and hanging out with us. Yeah. Next week, we have another roundtable coming up, I believe, on the 30th with a lot of fantastic activists, celebrities, athletes.
Yes.
Community, we'll be talking about a lot of what we discussed last week, but beyond, right, Rob?
Yep. Quandre Diggs, Quandre Diggs, starting safety for the Seahawks. Renee Montgomery, starting point guard for the Atlanta Dream,
WNBA. Who is foregoing this season because she is going to just
100%
keep going on with her incredible social justice reform act.
Ashley Spencer, who's 300, she runs the 300 hurdles for the USA team. She's an Olympian. And then we'll have a police officer whose name will remain,
anonymous
right now. Yeah, for now. So unless he's comfortable.
We'll just have the little shadow head.
It'll be great. So make sure y'all tune in next week.
All right, you guys. Right, thank you so much.
All right. Peace. Have a good night.
Mouth double as a freeze rate. The grills in my mouth double as a freeze rate.